What is going on, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Rad podcast. My name is Chad, and this week we were joined by Steve Cherkasky of the band Lost Puppy.
When earthly winds aren't strong enough to lift me to your skies.
So first off, Steve, I apologize if I pronounce your name wrong, but Lost Puppy is an experimental indie pop rock band from LA, and it's a three-piece trio that's just, they're super cool. They've got a fun energy about them, and Steve is a really, really rad guy. It was really fun getting to talk to him, and he's just down to earth, and he cares a lot about creating and improving and growing and learning. And those are things that I love as well. So we had a lot of fun talking about all of these different topics. And so I'm excited for you guys to hear this one. But as usual, before we begin, I want to remind you guys to go check out Lost Puppy's Instagram as well as their Facebook. And while you're at it, just swing on over to the Beyond Rad podcast page and give us a like, a follow. And if you're a fan, if you enjoy the episodes, a share is always very helpful. And I want to let you know that this episode is a little choppy at times. We did have a poor connection between whether it was his internet or something over here on my end. So I want to apologize in advance that there are some times where it gets a little choppy, but just bear with me because it's still a super, super awesome episode. Anyway, without further ado, let's just jump right on in. So yeah. How's your day going, man?
Pretty darn good. I was actually super stoked for this interview, for this podcast and everything, and just to have a chance to speak one on one. And yeah, we've got a gig happening tonight, so that's good. And yeah, just trying to stay busy, you know.
Awesome, man. That's super, super cool. I know James got it set up for us here, and I want to
personally, if it's all right, I'd like to personally on this podcast thank him. Thank you, James, very much.
Yeah, James is a stud, man.
A record.
Yeah, dude, James is a stud. He's actually gotten probably at least 5 or 6 of these interviews set up for me by now, I think.
My goodness.
Yeah, he's an absolute champ, and it's been a lot of fun working with him. So I'm really pumped for this, and I'm really excited to talk with you a little bit more. But one of the fun things for me is I love to get to know, obviously, the people behind the music, because I'm a huge music fan. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll start talking a little bit about the band.
Well, all right. From the beginning? No.
However long you want to go back, however far, just, you know, I've always, you know, like, throughout all my time, I'm like, how do you go about that? When someone says, tell me about yourself, it's like, well, I'm a human being.
Yeah.
I am a 28-year-old male, and I am defined by things I do.
Fair enough, yeah. Aren't we all? But yeah, you got 1 year on me. I'm 27. I'm
okay.
Born in May.
Awesome, man. And, hey, May is my birthday, yeah. So I'll be turning 29.
Yeah. Woo! How's it feel?
I'm going to be 28. Woo!
Yeah, man. Just getting older and older. It kind of feels surreal at times, but you know.
Isn't it? Oh, man. No, I'm excited for it. No matter what, I'm just you ever have those friends back in maybe like when you were younger, maybe like high school or something like that, and you're just like, oh well, we made it another year without killing ourselves in some stupid way.
Yeah,
that's kind of like I'm still there, man. I'm still trying to. Like, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah, I gotta learn from the mistakes and try and make the most of the future. Right? It's like. Where am I going? And at times it feels like nowhere, and at times it feels like everywhere. And then sometimes you feel like just perfectly aligned, and you know what? That may all happen in the same day. So,
say lovey, my friend. Say lovey. But yeah, I mean, the way that I got attached to music was, my parents are like old school Russian, so like they kind of got me these piano lessons when I was a little kid.
Uh huh.
Those were, they were all right. They were a little more disciplinary than I wanted when I was that young.
So yeah,
I kind of like went away from that and then got into drugs a little bit. And then all of a sudden, I think maybe I was like 7 or 8, and I picked up a guitar for the first time. And I was kind of my parents were always kind of working.
Yeah.
So I would always be coming home, and there was like an acoustic guitar always waiting for me. I didn't know how to play it. I think I remember being like 8 or 9, and you know, I would just get home and have really like not much to do and just kind of try to use my imagination and play around with it. And sometimes, you know, the real kind of intimate feeling that I kept getting with music was something along the lines of like, I would lay on the family couch, you know, just have nothing to do, and you know, put the guitar on my chest and strum it, and the vibrations would kind of help relax me and like put me to sleep.
For sure.
So yeah, just that kind of, it made me feel like I was understood, you know?
I think that's
really the main mission for this type of musical project, is just reach out to people who feel as if they're misunderstood in the world. So yeah, I think that's really important.
That's awesome. And is that kind of where the name came from then, is just kind of reach out?
Lost puppy. I guess like those kinds of people, and like most of us are, feel that way a lot.
Yeah.
For sure. The name kind of came about when I was, I think maybe late high school or college, something along those lines. But I know some people very close to me, I would walk into a room and just have this bewildered look on my face, because, you know, you're kind of, I was still kind of flying on the seat of my, on the seat of my pants.
And yeah.
Just trying to get this whole life thing started.
Yeah.
You know, I was already like late teens, early 20s. And I was like, So, I would just walk in, and my eyes would be, you know, really big and just like, what is this place? And they'd be like, oh, you look like a lost puppy. And it just stuck after all that time.
That's so fantastic. Yeah. That's that actually, you know, that makes sense. That's funny though. I just, whenever I think of like band title, band names, there's always something, it's typically something super random that just leads to it. So that's kind of funny how that came about.
Yeah. Right.
So you said, oh yeah, sorry, go on.
Oh no, not at all. Not at all. You asked the question, sir.
No, it's good. So you were saying that you grew up, obviously both your parents were kind of old. Are you there?
Oh yeah. I'm sorry about that. You cut out for a second.
Oh no, you're totally fine. No. Yeah. So you said you grew up in a pretty old school. You said both your parents were like old fashioned Russian, you said?
Yeah. I mean, they wanted their kids. We were I think it's called first generation, when the first generation that's born in the States.
Yeah.
The second generation. I can't remember, but we're, you know, my parents were, you know, they came from the Soviet Union, and they kind of had, I mean, they were very forgiving, because I was the youngest of the three boys.
Yeah.
So they were more forgiving than, you know, than before, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But you know, they wanted me to have some sort of, from what I remember, some sort of structure, you know, being young. But, you know, they were still there. They've been supportive of my musical endeavors to this day, and I'm very grateful of that.
That's awesome. I think yeah. That's something that can be discounted at times, is the yeah. amount of impact that support or lack of support can have. So I think that's super important. And I mean, kind of coming from that, you know, obviously you said you were kind of in some super intense, more strict piano lessons and stuff, and then transition to obviously playing the acoustic guitar and kind of feeling the
and
music.
Then getting my first electric, yeah.
Yeah. So how did that transition happen? How did, like, when it came down to it, as your parents were like, hey, you know, let's get you into the guitar lessons, or let's get you moving forward with this, how did that transition kind of come about?
The simplest way possible, actually, because I showed more of like a kinship, if that's the way to put it, with that instrument, with guitar, yeah. than anything else. Like I loved the feel of it, and I really felt something different with that instrument than anything else. That in singing, I really enjoy that. But as soon as I kind of, like, you know, the typical story is like, you know, I beg my parents or like my dad to like, hey, can we go get a guitar or something like that? And just like hope on his coat about something. And after a while, he's just like, all right, And then we went to this place called George's, I think, in Philly.
Uh-huh.
And I remember we got this, like, I think it was like a $200 J. Tercer guitar, and it had this beautiful sunburst design on it, and it was so gorgeous. And yeah, that was my first guitar, and I played that thing to death, through high school, and learned all these old grunge songs and like Cream, Sunshine of Your Love, and like old rock and roll like that, and like Mudhoney and yeah. stuff like that. So I really and I would videotape myself just to make sure I didn't mess up, you know.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, I really had to shed, and I was like so passionate about it, and they saw.
That's so cool. So when did you decide that, hey, I want to actually be a musician? Cause obviously this is something that I always find very interesting. Cause as I mentioned it in my podcast multiple times, if anyone listens, consistently is that people don't become musicians to be financially well off or to have continual, residual income or anything. There's more passion, and they don't do it to sleep on friends' couches and to travel in a van with a bunch of guys. That's not what
it can be fun.
Yeah. But I'm just saying it's typically those are the things where it's you look back and it's fun, but in the moment it's a grind. It's a lot of sacrifice and struggle. So kind of when it came down and you're like, you know what, I'm willing to make the sacrifice. I'm willing to have the struggles because I want to be a musician. I think this is who I am. When did that kind of come about?
I think I can remember back to maybe when I was around 16.
Uh-huh.
I wrote my first song. I remember I was a late bloomer when it came to discovering artists that were considered to be iconic. One in particular I just discovered was Bob Dylan.
Uh-huh.
And the song Tangled Up in Blue, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song for the first time kind of explaining in that kind of rambling fashion about my family and my brothers and how we all got brought up. And it was kind of that weaving a tale around our family history. And it felt really good to put pen to paper and go through that process and feel I have some sort of craft. And even when I was younger, I would write all the time, and I loved poetry, and putting it to music just felt like the easiest. I mean, not the easy, I mean, easiest, but it felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah. The most natural medium.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. And so tell me how Lost Puppy came about then.
As far as the band, I lived in Boston for 6 years.
Uh-huh.
And towards the end of that time when I was there, I made a debut record with my mentor at the time and good buddy, Dan Cantor.
Uh-huh.
At a studio in Watertown, Mass. And that was awesome. For the first time, the process of making a record, and it was a massive learning experience, and I was so nervous all the time, but it really was such fun.
Yeah.
But as far as, the current band that I have now, I took the record with me, released it in 2017, and put a single out recently. The band that we have now, with myself on guitar and vocals, mm-hmm. Philip Nielsen, Philip Nielsen, the Danish Viking on bass, and the technical Swiss prowess of our drummer. I arrived at LA and I knew Carlo for quite a while because we both went to school in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And then he moved to LA and started grinding as a musician immediately.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep in touch with him because he was just a very sweet person. And lo and behold, I get here, I talk to him, we start jamming a little, and we're like, oh, we should turn this into a project, turn this into the band thing. And we tried out some bass players who are awesome. not to discount their efforts at all. They're all very professional, very amazing people. But then I had this feeling of like, I really want somebody who's,
I'm a weird guy.
Okay. Well, like, you know, I wanted somebody else that we could be kind of weird and eccentric and experimental musically with.
Yeah, for sure.
And we found Phil, and like that, it just felt right. The camaraderie between the three of us, like, felt like a triumvirate. Felt really fun.
That's awesome. I think honestly, that's something that you spend, you know, there's so much, I don't know, kind of emotion, or, you know, obviously there's a lot of time, but there's a lot that goes into being in a band, especially with you guys are pretty active in terms of playing shows and getting out there and, you know, sharing your music and stuff. That means you're going to be spending obviously a lot of time with one another. So I think, you know, being able to mesh would make a big difference. And so that makes sense to me for sure.
Mm.
And so like I said, I mean, you guys are pretty active. And something that always intrigues me is there are so many people who bounce out, go to LA, and, you know, they grind, right? And they go and they grind to be musicians. And the one thing that is pretty consistent is, you know, it's hard. It's a grind. So how, when you decided, all right, I'm going out to LA, I'm going to join this. Mm-hmm. How scared were you?
Ooh, pretty darn. But at the same time, I mean, I could tell you like a little bit of like, I think the fear is I think it has like age reversing effects, and to kind of explain that, or like stress reversing effects, because after my time in Boston, I lived in, back with my parents for just a little bit under a year, and just outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And, you know, just kind of help them out with stuff. And, you know, the stress of not doing anything having to do with music and kind of remaining stuck. And again, pretty like a very prominent patch of white hair kind of on my chin. And I'm like,
what?
So like, you know, just be really concerned about that. And as soon as I moved out to LA, it was gone. So I would take that fear any day over remaining stagnant, you know, anywhere that I feel that.
Yeah. So what is it about the fear that keeps you from remaining stagnant?
Ooh, man, good question. What is it about the fear? I don't know, man. I gotta tell you, it's, because you tend to, I think it's because it can challenge anyone that they feel as if there's like a stagnancy within their philosophy or their lives or any sort of, they need to grow, and whether they realize it or not, they're kind of pulled towards something. And I guess that kind of, no, maybe that's why the fear
kind
of brings it out of me. I'm not sure.
No, that makes sense. I mean, obviously we're kind of getting philosophical a little bit in that aspect of things, but like, to me, it feels like obviously the fear, it challenges you to question, you know, what motivates you, right?
Mm. I would say so. And you can maybe like, if there's any sort of question at all, you tend to, at least myself personally, I tend to overanalyze, is this exactly what I'd be doing? And then time and time again, I either reconfirm it or I move on to something that feels as if it can complete me more as an individual and as a songwriter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of ties into what you were saying, you know, feeling stagnant back home and getting that gray patch, you know, it's kind of one of those things that you, when you stop kind of stretching, this is a quote that I don't remember who told me. It was probably I don't know, 12, 15 years ago that I heard it, but I just have stuck with it and love it. It's, you know, there's no comfort in a growing zone, but there's no growth in a comfort zone, right? So like you can be stagnant and comfortable, but you're not growing. You're not actually
very nice
becoming anything, right? And so that's why I was curious to know, like, that fear is defining of you, not in that you know you're scared to do anything, but that you're overcoming the fear, and that's what's defining who you are, right?
That's right.
And I mean, when it comes down to it, and there's so much competition, there's so many noises out there, so many voices, so many different things pulling attention away. How do you guys, as a band, maintain focus and as well try to maintain relevance within the you know, the hearts and minds of your listeners?
Well, the thing about competition is I think it's always so important in any medium, any field whatsoever, because you want to get better as a result.
Yeah.
I see acts that are local to us, even, you know, really widely known international acts that have really upped their game as far as songwriting and production, and they make me want to get better. You know, I don't feel the least bit of resentment towards that. I want that, and I want them to get better.
Yeah,
you know, because I feel like it's like a good way to kind of go about it. I mean, I love like Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys and the Beatles, and I love the friendly rivalry they had in like the 60s with Pet Sounds and Rubber Soul and Sgt. Pepper and then Smile, which should have come out during that time too.
Yeah.
So there was a friendly rivalry between two of some of the greatest bands ever. That's a great archetype to go by. Anyone in any artistic field is, you know, you need your contemporaries to be better than you so that you can continually better yourselves.
I would agree with that.
I hope that answered the question.
No, I totally would agree with that. And obviously, as it's the motivation that gets you better, right? As you see them get better and you start to be motivated to get better yourself. That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, let's look at it. Despite whether it's like, even if it's like an older influence mixed with like a newer influence, because I just finished writing a song that was influenced by both Sabbath and Post Malone, which is like, but like for some reason, I think it, you know, mixing the, because I think they're phenomenal acts, and just feeling as if I, you know, they're obviously better than. I just wanted to see if I could mix the two together, the catchiness of one and the raw kind of the raw riffage of the other. I don't know how else to describe it, but
So sorry, you cut out real when you were saying which bands it was. Which were the two bands that you were talking about that you were kind of?
Oh, this is going to be even better. So the first one was Black Sabbath.
Oh, okay.
Because you know I've been listening. Like the song Snowblind, I think it was.
Okay.
And even then, like I got into this band, I think called Anubis. And they did a really cool song that kind of sounds like it. And the second influence to it, which had more of an influence on the song structure and like more of like how production might be handled as well as with Sabbath, but a hip hop artist, Post Malone.
Okay. That's awesome. Yeah. I always find that really cool because that's something that's interesting to me in when it comes to like inspirations, right? Like who's inspired by what? And for me, like when it comes to like inspirations, I'm inspired not necessarily by, you know, all of the output. I'm inspired by the input, right? Like the grind that people will go through and bands will go through to get to a certain point, and like the, you know, their willingness to push the boundaries and say, hey, you know what? I don't want to just produce the same thing again. I want to try something new. I want to kind of push those boundaries. And then obviously, you know, musicians that will push boundaries of genres. And so that's kind of cool how you're doing that, how you're kind of pulling from those different inspirations and, mm-hmm. and kind of trying to meld it into one and make it, I guess your own, right? Which is the ultimate goal.
Thank you.
And so recently I was watching, like I watch on YouTube, the performances from American Idol. And there's one of the guys on there, Alejandro. I don't know. Yeah, dude. What a freaking great beast, man. He's so good.
He really is.
And
that song. That's it. Game over.
Dude, the guy just yeah, I mean, he's just like he makes it his own for sure. And like when you were talking about that, that's kind of what came to my mind. I was like, dude, he makes every song his own, and he's like he's just a musician through and through. And I think that's something that is just I think really important is for someone to say, hey, you know, I can repeat what someone else has done, or I can make it my own. And I think that's cool that you guys are doing that too, as you're writing music and you're looking at it, making it your own. I think that's a fantastic, you know, way of doing things, as opposed to trying to just say, okay, well, this is what's popular. Let me just rehash what's popular.
Yeah. So I have a growing concern for that type of mentality, for sure.
Yeah, it's because of the social media, right? It's like, well, where's the attention? Let's go where the attention is.
Yeah.
But I mean, for someone like me, I'm a fan of a lot of video games as well, and so like seeing what Fortnite did in the video game realm is like, mm-hmm. okay, they may have been where the attention was. But because of that attention, things happened. So I was like, oh, you know, sometimes it's good, like you were saying with the competition. So mm-hmm. who knows? But
yeah,
I think kind of jumping a little bit back, you were talking, you know, writing songs and the songwriting process. What is it that you employ to write a song? Like, what's your process that you're employing to write a song?
Well, if I could go back just 1 second, because you mentioned video games, and I'm sure you're gonna love this little tidbit. you know the VGAs, right? The Video Game Awards.
Yeah,
I think there was one last year, right? Or is it this year? I forget. But there was a performance on there. You can see it online. So my drummer Carlo, he jumps around to from projects every now and again.
Uh-huh.
And there's a performance of the Devil May Cry 5 song, the theme okay. song called Devil Trigger, and he's yeah. playing on that.
No way.
he's on TV. It's crazy.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. Yeah. Dude, that's so rad. One of the people I interviewed, his name is Jackie Vincent. He's a phenomenal guitarist, and he posted recently on Facebook. He's like, what video game soundtracks should I listen to for inspiration? And I was like, cause he does lead guitar. Like, he's just a soloist and really cool. Definitely check out his guitar playing. I mean, he's just so flipping awesome. He used to play lead guitar for, I think it was Falling in Reverse is who he used to play guitar for.
For who? I'm sorry.
Falling in Reverse. I believe that was the,
oh, okay.
But yeah, anyway, I just noted, like, I just kind of thought of that when you were saying your drummer played that. I was like, man, there's so much involved in the music for video games that people just don't appreciate.
I love that stuff. The older stuff too, like Nobuo Uematsu and like, the guys who did, the Silent Hill games are.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The music amazing. Made those games, right? Like, I mean, without the music, it's not going to be the game that it is, right? I mean, it's so huge. So hold on, we're gonna just kind of twist here a little bit. What are your top five games?
Ooh, that's tough, man.
It's very tough, I know. But you're on the spot now, so you got to make the decision.
well, like one of my, can I give you top three? If I can do top five.
Top three works. That works.
Okay. Well, number one, the first one that I can think of is Red Dead Redemption, the first one.
Okay.
Because I don't know, it's just because I fell in love with John Marston as a character and
such
like
a cool
that.
Character, dude. That game was just flawless.
Yeah, it was perfect. And you know, it's just amazing because I love Westerns and yeah. just kind of captured that for me.
For sure.
What else? And I would say, you're going to laugh, but I mean, like I was, as a kid, I was really into like Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, dude. I used to love Kingdom Hearts. I played it all the time back in the day.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
So you've been playing the third one then?
No, I haven't had a chance. I actually don't have... It's sad because I don't have a video game system here. So I figure like it's... Which is like for a gamer, it's just like, no, I can't. But, you know, I try to keep myself occupied in different ways.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I can play games for hours and just like, not even realize it.
Yeah, it's a problem. I'm going to be playing tonight with my brother-in-law. He and I have been playing The Division 2 a lot. So
nice. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, dude, it's a game that is, it actually got me really excited about the looter shooters again, because most of the time they get really annoying, but it revitalized the genre for me a little bit. So I'm pretty excited.
That's awesome. And as for the third one, well, I guess I can't really think of one off the top of my head.
No, that's fine. I don't know. I'm surprised you didn't mention like a Zelda game.
Yeah, I did like Zelda. I love Wind Waker. There it is.
Okay.
Wind Waker was like one of my top favorites, definitely.
I loved the art style of Wind Waker.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
People actually hated it when it came out because it's too kiddie. I'm like, no, man, it's great.
See, I'm obsessed with like, so I love a lot of like illustration and that type of work. And so like, to me, one of the greatest movies is that, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, that art, like the art style and the care they took in making that movie is just second to none. It is so cool. And they had like, I think it was over 120 illustrators working on that project.
Oh my goodness.
And it,
I haven't seen it, but I really want to. And I'm a huge fan of animation, especially like what got me into it was like the old Newgrounds animators and like they kind of transferred to YouTube, like Egoraptor and OniNG and like, I'm a fan of those guys. I think they're super talented.
Yeah. I definitely recommend, Into the Spider-Verse. Cause even like, the art style is amazing, but the story is super compelling and it's just fun. Like I got a 3.5-year-old, he and I went and saw it, like a few weeks after it came out in the theaters.
Awesome.
And it was just, so maybe that's why I like it even more. Right. But, but yeah, it was, it's definitely, I would recommend seeing it. I know obviously you're busy, but you know, if you ever get a chance to sit down and maybe get it a Redbox something, definitely do it.
Yeah, a good animated movie that I just saw with a friend of mine. What is it? Oh, Missing Link. Missing Link by Laika, Studio Laika.
Okay, I haven't seen.
The story's all right. The animation.
Wait, is that the? What is that one about?
It's about like a. Zach Galifianakis plays a Sasquatch.
Okay, it is that one. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought it was. I wasn't completely sure, so I was like, "Wait, is that the Sasquatch one?" But that's awesome. Yeah, I've heard good things about it. So
yeah, it's actually pretty cute, and it's kind of Stephen Fry be the villain and like completely have just crying outbursts in an old English accent. It's perfect.
That's awesome. I'll have to check that one out. I'm sure my son will love it too. So
yeah, of course.
All right. So we're going to jump a little bit back again to the style that you know, your writing style, how you do it, kind of what you do to write music. Cause obviously, you know, there's going to be a lot to it, but kind of in your eyes, like what inspires you to write a song when you think I'm going to write a song, what is it that motivates that?
Well, just the, cause it's, I feel like there's a philosophy among some artists and it obviously I'm not coming down on them. I wouldn't at all. Cause everybody has their own vision and their own way of creating things.
Sure.
But at the same time, I feel like there should always be the philosophy of sometimes you just have to work.
Yeah.
Sometimes even if it doesn't hit you, as a writer, if you need to write something, try and at least get a page or two.
Yeah.
Even if you're not even feeling it, you might be clearing out the cobwebs for next time,
so yeah,
that you can actually have a more clearer vision at the end.
For sure.
I remember a teacher of mine kind of gave a little expose, a very short expose on like the whole thing of songwriting is keep writing, because 90% of your stuff is going to be absolute crap.
that's awesome.
You're essentially writing to get to that 10%, that gold.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Well, I mean, that's kind of the principle for life, right? Have you ever heard of the Pareto principle?
I have. I can't. What is it? 80-20, right?
Yeah, 80-20 rule, yeah. Right? Like 80% of your time is going to be spent on the things that bring, you know, 80% of your joy is going to come from 20% of your activities, or 80% mm-hmm. of your 20% of your time is going to produce, you know, over 80% of the results. And so, so it's kind of that principle of like, yeah, you may have to work for, you know, 80% of those songs are going to suck, but those 20 are going to be great. Right.
That's right.
And, I think that's awesome. I think that's a great inspired way of teaching a kid to not get discouraged. Just be like, dude, it's going to pan out. It's just, you just have to put in the work.
Yeah. Absolutely. For sure. I think any kid who's getting into any sort of art, but usually like when a kid gets into art, like they usually just find the rhythm and they're like, oh, this feels really good. And then once they kind of hit, even then, like once they kind of hit a downslope and they're like, oh man, but I want to find, like, that's when the hook kind of gets sunk in and they're like, oh, I'm an artist now. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so funny. Like, I really wish I could remember exactly who said what I'm going to refer to. I'm going to try and find it and I'll make sure I include it in the description, so that way I give credit where credit's due. But, sure. There's an individual, I was listening to a podcast, I believe it was the Chase Jarvis podcast, which he's super awesome. He's all about creativity and stuff. And he had someone on there who was talking about, you know, in order to write to be a writer, he said that you should write 1,000 words a day and just write it. He's like, I don't look at any of that stuff. I write it as a warm up every day. He's like, 1,000 words. I write it down. I get kind of like word vomit onto the page and then just forget about it. But he's like, it's the routine and the practice of writing that makes it so when I write something that's meaningful, I'm already in that zone.
Absolutely.
So for you, like, as you're, you know, trying to focus on the music and create music, how do you remain, like, are you able to remain in the zone, I guess, is part of the question, but how would you remain in the zone of writing music and kind of making that progress?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say I'm always in the zone, because I think that's kind of like, it's almost like a, like what Nietzsche would have thought of as like the Übermensch, just like the guy who's always in the zone, who laughs in the face of any sort of demonic figure, or like the snake trying to make him miserable, anything of that nature. I don't think, but as far, I'm digressing, but
no, that's good. I love it.
But the whole thing is, I feel like even though I'm not always in the zone, I feel like I'm always in that headspace. Even when I'm walking down the street, I have a melody in my head and I'm like, that sounds good. I need to just get a little memo of it down, and I record it, and then it can turn into a song, or it can be part of it can be recycled into something. There's always a craft it's become like a consistent subtext throughout my life now. And I feel awesome. Really good about it. Yeah.
And with that, as you're, you know, as you're constantly thinking and you're constantly putting things out there and trying to save things, how often are you kind of recycling, right? Like as you're going through the process, there's going to be a lot that you're sifting through. How do you do that? How do you make sure that you're like, hey, this is what I'm going to do? How do you make that decision?
Sometimes it's just blind faith, really.
I love it.
I mean, it's really, I mean, if for any songwriter that's out there, I mean, if it sounds good to you, it's got to sound good to someone else, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've had ideas that I have played for years and have not found a way in my world to kind of attach them to anything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, nowhere, you know, there's like a little piece of something that you stick it into a song that you're working on that has a solo potential. And then you stick something from an older idea in there and it just makes it work like magic. And
yeah.
It just feels so great when that happens.
For sure.
And, so yeah, it's an ongoing, and I thoroughly enjoy it when that happens, especially, yeah. Like, you know,
It's always convenient when the hard work you've done makes your current work easier, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's hard work and, you know, leading up to this point makes what you're doing now seem a little easier, but it's still obviously putting in hard work. So I think that's super cool, man. I like that. And
thank you.
I mean, for like, as you've gone through this process and you've gone through, I'm just kind of assuming here, but I'm sure you've gone through those slumps where it was hard to write anything. And then those times where you kind of like felt like, oh, I don't have enough time to write at all. How do you balance that and make sure that you kind of live in the world of like consistency? Does that make sense?
So like if, kind of like trying to balance the pressures and the responsibilities of the world with trying to stay creative, or
honestly, that's a great question. That one too. Well, I was thinking as well, like, so I think that's actually a really cool question. So first that question, and then secondly would be, how do you keep yourself motivated during the low times, and how do you carry the high times and maximize them for the longest, like when it comes to your writing?
Oh, that's a good question too, man. Can I tell you?
you got two questions to answer here.
Well, as far as, let's see. I might be a little scattergun with my answer. I'll try.
I
my
love
best.
It. No problem, dude. I'm all for that. So don't even hesitate to just keep going on whatever direction you feel.
Sure. I guess the question that I kind of posed, the idea of, I mean, it is always going to be something that comes up, and even then it can inspire somebody. It can inspire what, you know, the creator to do something. I'm not sure how to answer it. I think, something as simple as writing a sentence a day, or at least doing at minimum something, maybe minutes or 15 minutes a day, will make you feel as if, you know, you're not being lazy. Cause yeah. I worry about that often.
Yeah. Cause obviously laziness, it kind of hinders the ability to be creative, at least.
Yeah. Can hinder the soul. It's interesting when it does that, you know. I would rather be anything else than lazy, man. And sometimes I get there and I'm like, oh no.
And it's so hard because sometimes you're just like, man, I just need to be lazy right now.
Yeah.
But you don't want to because you're just tired. You're beat up. You're worn out. You're exhausted. Yeah, I mean, and it's tough, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, by my age, my dad already had two kids. Like, he had no choice but to work his ass off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, both my parents work their ass off all the time. So
yeah.
So I can't, knowing that, and just like, as the, you know, what was, you know, who was before me and who has been working contemporaneously, I think that's the word.
Yeah. Yep.
I guess maybe that's wrong, but I don't know. I'm not entirely sure of the answer just yet, but
no, that's fine, man. I like that.
I'll let you know when I find it.
No, I mean, honestly, that's life, right? Is a journey of trying to find the answers. It's
absolutely.
If there was an answer to everything, there would be no purpose. So I think that, you know, it's that journey of finding that answer and finding that balance. Cause, you know,
I'm in this boat right now where I'm like, I've got two kids. I've got a full-time work. I'm in school right now again.
Oh, dude, congrats.
For whatever reason, I chose to do that. and then, you know, trying to balance all of that and still, you know, maintain energy and sanity. And it's like, you know what? You're right. I'd rather be anything than lazy. But right now I'd rather do nothing and be bored, but
yeah,
I don't want to at the same
anything.
Yeah, exactly. which is what I'm going to do right after this, honestly. Yeah. Right. You know, hang out with them before bedtime and then hopefully do some schoolwork and then play some video games.
Sounds like a good night.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be a good night. And then go to class tomorrow morning. Cause that's what happens when you have full-time work. You go to school in the evenings and on weekends.
So, for you.
Oh, thanks, awesome. Man. No, it's good. It'll pay off in the long run, I hope.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
So kind of jumping back, like I think something that I think honestly it kind of ties in with what you were talking about in terms of being lazy and kind of being complacent. But like the I guess when you were saying those things, I was meaning not being lazy and not being complacent.
Of course,
But like when it comes to a lot of kids now, you know, just people in general, like it's so easy to be short-sighted and to rethink right now rules the near future, right? The future is determined by my current situation. And so for the people in the creative world, if that was truly the case, nothing new would ever be created because there's so many times where you just can't muster up the creativity. And so how would you say that you stay motivated during those times where you're trying to just muster up that creativity and muster up the motivation to be excited and continue pushing forward?
Ooh, well, I don't mean to get a little dark, but I mean, sometimes, you know, there are dark periods that kind of come up every now and again. And sometimes I'm going to be honest. Sometimes I don't feel the motivation and the excitement. But at the same time, it's always the,
like I said,
the subtext throughout my life has been this creative journey. And it always, I guess maybe that underlying subtext is kind of the underlying motivation.
Yeah.
So it's like my subconscious is telling me to don't give up, keep going. Yeah. And you have this thing that's, you know, that maybe it could, who knows, maybe it could make someone feel understood or, you know, yeah, I don't know. It's the as far as other people staying motivated, even in the worst of times, I think that maybe going through those times, it's the way that I can describe it is in the most lighthearted way I can possibly describe it. You ever listen to so much? And this is music related. You ever listen to so much like pop music or listen to a song that you love absolutely to death, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh man, I don't know if I want to listen to this song anymore. And which is a shame because I love it.
Yeah.
But I've heard it so many times. It feels so predictable now. It feels like it doesn't have the same energy as it had before.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope this is somehow related to what I was talking about.
No, but this is good.
It's kind of like, so I had that before. And I remember like getting into one song and having that experience and then listening to Tension, like listening to someone like Morton Feldman.
Mm-hmm.
If he's a minimalist composer who specializes in some of the most intense yet very, very, like he plays a piano. It's very intimate.
Yeah.
Type of tension. He plays these tense chords always, and sometimes you feel as if he's going to hit that right tonic note.
That
little
that'll make
note.
It have a resolve.
Yeah, and some sort of resolving will happen, and he does it for a split second, then he comes right back in again. So you never have any sense of relief whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the
thing is that,
like the dark times that I've experienced, I'm trying to kind of form a parallel here. I listen to that, and then I come back to the song that I felt that was more predictable, and I hear it with such new ears.
Yeah.
And I feel like as if there's a new meaning to that song and a new way to digest it. So I think the tension of the lack of motivation and is completely reasonable.
Yeah.
I feel like anybody that goes through that is absolutely human, and then you come back from it and you listen to something that you thought you never would have thought of before from your own, you know, from your more stable mindset. And
yeah.
It just completely changes your outlook.
That's awesome. I like that. No, like, I mean, people always talk about seeing with new eyes, and I think that's a great analogy. I think that's a great comparison of trying to see with new eyes. And in your case, it's hearing with new ears. Right. And I think, I think that's a really great way of putting it. So I honestly think the most difficult thing about it is realizing that there's so much pressure put on your shoulders by yourself, by people around you, by, you know, society in general. And so it kind of can stifle and hinder a lot of people. So I really appreciate that insight, because ultimately it's what you do to get out of that creates beauty in the world of creativity, I think. And it allows for people to kind of claw out by, like you were saying, hearing with new ears or seeing with new eyes and being able to appreciate what someone's created for them as well. So that's awesome. So we're going to kind of end on a more fun note.
Yes, please.
So I always like to end these with just kind of like fun questions about, like, you know, your favorite things. So this one, what is your favorite either single or series, but book?
Ooh, wait, a book?
Yeah. Your favorite book, either a single book or a series that's, you know, obviously, you know, like the Lord of the Rings. You can't say that, okay, the Two Towers is my favorite. It's no, the whole series is my favorite. Right. So
I could probably give you a top five of these.
Yeah. Let's do it. Perfect. Top five books.
Okay. Well, as of right now, I love the Rural Trilogy by Federico Garcia Lorca. Some of the most passionate writing I've ever had, you know, the pleasure of reading.
What was it?
So that's the Rural Trilogy.
Okay.
Rural.
Okay.
And yeah, it's just magic on a page.
That's awesome.
It's beautiful. And then Colossus of Marusi, Henry Miller.
Okay.
Maravigine by Blaise Cendrars, which is great. It's a story about it's a psychiatrist, I think, in like the late 19th century, early 20th century, who breaks out a convict or breaks out a psychiatric patient, like a violent one, and they travel around the world and they join a communist rebellion, and then they go, you know, and they do some really bloody crazy stuff there, and then they go to America and they do some really illegal stuff there. And
interesting.
It turns out the convict, Maravigine was his name. He was like some sort of heir to like a Swiss or something like that. It's a very intense book.
Interesting.
Not for the lighthearted, for sure.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And also currently, let's see, I'm reading Faust by Goethe, and that's really beautiful.
Awesome.
And any sort of psychology book is super interesting. And I love, like Carl Jung and this guy named Douglas Hofstadter, who kind of, it's not so much psychology, but he goes more into like, there's a book called Gödel, Escher, and Bach.
Okay.
And I'm kind of, it's a large volume, so I'm kind of flipping through that as best to my ability. But it, it goes through all of these, through like mathematical axioms, it tries to find like some sort of truth to life and art and creativity mixed with all of that. And it's really dense. So I'm trying my best to find, to follow through with it, but it's beautiful.
Interesting. That's cool, man. Yeah. That's awesome. I've honestly hadn't heard of any of those. So it's fun for me to hear.
Always happy to recommend all of those. They're great.
Heck yeah. That's awesome, man. All right. So next one is your favorite live concert you've ever been to.
Ooh. Well, my first one was pretty amazing. I was 14 and my brother took me to my first concert. It was Pearl Jam.
Oh, nice, man. That's awesome.
Cause we were, you know, he got me super into grunge when I was pretty young, and he's like, you want to go see Eddie Vedder rock out? I'm like, yeah,
that's fantastic.
So, I remember we were sitting in the parking lot, and I was kind of like a pretty like geeky kid. I wasn't really into like drinking or drugs or anything, or I was like, I don't know. I wasn't into it, but my brother was kind of like drinking a little bit. And like, there was this fake cop that walked up to our parked car. Cause we were already in the parking lot. So he wasn't driving. So
yeah, for sure.
If this is going to be used on him later, I don't know. but this guy came up to us and like, he looked really threatening. He's like, excuse me, I'm going to need your license registration. He gives us stickers and it's just like, don't drink and drive. I'm like, oh, and then he walks away and kind of freaked us out.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, just something along those lines. But like, you know, I've seen Tom Petty and who was amazing, and Ghost, they were awesome too. And Def Heaven, and they're all great concerts.
Awesome, man.
But that was a good memory.
Yeah, that's always fun. I always love memories like that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, of course.
All right. What's your current favorite, if you watch anything, but current favorite TV series or Netflix series? Because obviously most people don't have TV anymore.
Oh, that's a tough one. Actually, I don't really tend to gravitate towards those kinds of things. Although maybe like, well, I don't know if it's technically official. But I remember there was a point in time, during just after college, and I was making my record, the first record with my mentor. And, I got into this show that came out, I think it's like 2006 or 2007, but it was on YouTube. So it was like way before I think any of that really, the platform really took off.
Yeah.
And it was, there's a comedian who I love. Her name is, Maria Bamford. Have you ever?
I haven't heard of her.
But she's great. She's really kooky and has these, and she has such a unique voice in the realm of comedy.
Okay.
Talks about dark issues, as well as like little idiosyncrasies that maybe not anyone has really thought of before. She's strange in the best way possible. And she came out with this thing online called the Maria Bam Show, where she films it entirely, like every character in the show is played by her. And she does all these crazy voices, and she plays her parents and all these people she meets when she moves back to her parents' house in Minnesota after like a big freak out. So like, it kind of like, it made me feel a little less crazy just to kind of relate to her and just be like, oh man, I love you, Maria. You're awesome.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I honestly was kind of surprised. So I asked this question as almost a leading question, cause I was like, I saw that, you know, the band covered a Gerard Way song. So I kind of expected like Umbrella Academy because of Gerard Way.
That for sure. I definitely started watching that, and it's very, very cool. Like,
but that's awesome. I'm glad I got a different answer, because that makes it more fun for me.
Yeah.
All right. And the last one is just kind of once again, another, just like I said, just for fun. But this one's a movie, your favorite movie.
Oh boy. Man, how can I tell you? It's that there's. I hope I'm not going into any sort of stereotype of being like a dark person. But there's this movie that actually kind of affected me, and I love, like, you know, slow burners. You know, like Blade Runner and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like old, you know, old sci-fi movies, and I love that stuff, and like old horror.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I watched is a movie by Ingmar Bergman called Wild Strawberries.
Okay.
And I think I remember it was all in black and white, and it was basically this journey that this old man had taken, I think, with his daughter-in-law after his son had passed.
Uh-huh.
I think they were probably like going to bury him or like driving to spill his ashes over the sea. I forget what the real premise was, but I remember being so affected by this old man's journey, and just they meet a couple of young kids along the way. You know, they're making out in the back seat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they have their drama while this old man, and you know, there's this different periods of life,
yeah,
kind of from the eye of this auteur director. And it's just such an experience to behold. So I think that, yeah. So I think that one was, it was the first that came to mind, and that's gotta count for something, right?
Yeah. There you go. Exactly. Well, man, that was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, man. It was a lot of fun talking with you. And best of luck with the show tonight. Super pumped for that.
Thank
for
you.
Anything else you want to say before we cut it off here?
Sure, if it's all right.
It's your platform now.
Thank you. Yeah. If anyone wants to follow us on @lostpuppyband.com @lostpuppyband. @lostpuppyband, and we've got a couple singles and an EP coming out later in the summer, June and July, and then the EP should be released sometime in September as well. So we should have some really fun shows coming for that.
Fantastic, man. I'm excited for you. That's super cool. And obviously you just released a music video, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we released the single and the music video for Satellite's Way.
Yeah.
So check that out. It's on YouTube, on Lost Puppy YouTube channel.
Awesome. Well, I'll link the description to it down below in the description. Ooh. Or the link to it in the description. There we go. But anyway, man, once again, thank you so much. And it was a pleasure getting to know you.
Thank you.